Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. If you're a foodie who enjoys and believes in the sustainable practice of consuming locally grown food, you're in luck these days as more and more Central Ohio restaurants embrace the mantra of the locavore and wrap their menus around what's available rather than maybe 2,000 miles away. Likewise, if you're struggling to put food on the table because of hard times and take advantage of the Mid-Ohio Food Bank's offerings, you're also in luck if fresh food and nutrition is still a goal. This hour, we're going to talk about community gardens, how they're taking off in Central Ohio, how they mean more than just food to a community, and how institutions, restaurants, and food pantries are getting their role laid down in the locavore movement. Joining us in a few minutes, Elizabeth Lessner. She's owner or co-owner of four restaurants in Columbus and one of the earliest and most vocal supporters of community gardens and locally grown food on the menu. And also later on, Evelyn Bem. She's senior vice president of the Mid-Ohio Food Bank's Food and Strategic Initiatives. And right now, Trish Denbostel. She's program manager for Local Matters. It's a nonprofit group that encourages Ohio-grown produce. Welcome to the show, Trish.
Thanks for having me.
And also Yolanda Moser. She works with Trish at Local Matters, but I asked her to join us today because she is the supervisor for the Wineland Park Community Garden, one of the earliest community gardens in the area, and probably therefore maybe one of the most successful because it's still out there alive and kicking. Welcome to the show, Yolanda.
All right. Thank you for having me.
Trish, Misty Crane of the Columbus Dispatch wrote over the weekend that experts say the trick is to figure out ways to improve the availability of healthful choices in a way that makes sense for individual neighborhoods. What does that mean, make sense for individual neighborhoods? Doesn't it make sense for everybody all the time in the same way?
Well, I think that's the thing that's interesting about working with food is that we're all connected by food, but it's the issues are different for everyone of what we eat, what we enjoy. Things that we've learned to cook from our family. So it's more than just access. It's also about education and also about making sure that the communities that we're doing our work in are engaged, want us there, and are part of the whole process from the start and moving up. So you can go into a neighborhood and provide food, but it may not be the food that they want to eat or enjoy cooking.
So how has Local Matters changed over the years to reflect those needs in different neighborhoods, and what does it do to respond to those?
Well, I think a big part of Local Matters is on looking at planning and evaluation and talking to people from the beginning and spending more time on that piece. So rather than I think that there's such an attention right now in the food movement to want to solve the problem and want to have gardens and start a bunch of initiatives, but I think the thing that we're really trying to focus on is partnering with the community, making sure they're involved in every piece of it, and spending some additional time on planning.
Besides community gardens, because we're going to get into that in a few minutes, but besides that, what are some of the things that an organization like Local Matters does?
Well, the focus of all of our work is on education, access, and supply. So everything that falls under that, we really are trying to stay focused on providing education that's relevant in different communities. We work with children in schools. One of our long-term partners is with CDC Head Start. So we do a program called Food is Elementary. And we know that children are at an age when they're younger that they're really open to try anything. They're open to trying fresh foods and really enjoying the taste of it and having fun with it. We don't just stop there. We know parents are important. So we have adult education programming. We have a veggie van that travels around to different neighborhoods and provides food. We have a partnership with the Greener Grocer. So there's just a series of different things we do. But I think the one thing that's most important is that we're ever-changing because we are connected to the community's needs. So maybe what we had initially thought was what the community needed, we've had to revise and change because it's really about having them engaged and talking with them and having it be something that they're invested in.
Yeah. Tell me, we talked earlier about food deserts, the disparity between the distance to, or the difference between the distance to a fast food restaurant in some neighborhoods and a full-serve grocery. And how does Local Matters, what is its recommendation for filling those kinds of gaps?
Well, an example would be we're currently working on a project with Wineland Park where we're doing a food mapping of the entire neighborhood. there's been a lot of attention on certain neighborhoods. Wineland Park is one of them. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we're doing in addition to partnering with the community is we're also having strategic partnerships with other organizations. So MORPC is involved, OSU, Wagenbrenner Developers, Godman Guild, the Civic Association. So I think one of the things that are that we're really focusing on is strategic partnerships and making sure that there's enough attention on planning either a program or, you know, gardens for a neighborhood or farmers markets or anything that the neighborhood wants so that it's sustainable. Because I think there's a lot of over the years, there's been great intentions to come into neighborhoods and do work. But I think without looking at that neighborhood as a partner and also trying not to do everything, so having strategic partners with people who are doing the things that you're not doing is key.
When Trish mentioned MORPC, she was talking about the Mid-Ohio Regional Planning Commission, and they do have a Central Ohio Local Food Assessment and Plan. I have the executive summary in front of me right now, and if you want to get a hold of that, you can go to MORPC online, and we'll have a link for you there on wosu.org/allsides in a little bit. Now, Trish, you started a community garden, you say, back when you lived in the University District back in 1989, and then you moved to Portland, Oregon, where you started a community garden out there. Mm-hmm. Things have changed a little bit since 1989. What did you see when you returned to Columbus?
I was so shocked. I really was.
And it was
It was shocking. There was so much change with even visual. There was so much change with greening, public art. It seemed like an explosion of community gardens. Everyone was talking about it. And I think at the same time, to have so much attention in also with Michael Pollan and now, you know, the Jamie Oliver show.
Omnivore's Dilemma and,
there was such a climate for people wanting to work together to make our city a great city. That was what was exciting for me. I was happy to come back. This is where I'm from. I have so many great friends and family, but what I noticed was there was such an excitement that in community gardening, I can use an example. Mm-hmm. I think the first intention was, well, I'm excited. I want to start a garden, so we'll put a garden in here. Well, there might have been another garden two blocks away that already, you know, was trying to make it. There might not have been looking at, do we have soil? What's the sunlight? Who's going to pay for the water? How many people have been invited? You know, what's the purpose of it? And I think the thing that's really exciting is seeing collaborations. The Growers Coalition right now for community gardens is so exciting to me. That's something that...
What is the Growers Coalition?
It's something that we've all been talking about for years is, okay, so Wineland Park or the University area, we've got all these ideas. We're doing this work. What about if we all joined together, shared our resources, shared what worked, what didn't work, and we started a coalition, and that's what it is. So it's leaders from different neighborhoods, people who are doing a variety of different gardens. So community gardens, market gardens, and then larger scale food production, all working together to pool their resources and also learn from each other.
Yolanda Moser, you now manage the community garden at Wineland Park. And the one that Trish started a few years ago. Tell us, what is a community garden anyways?
I think the biggest basis for a community garden is not only just having the food production, but being able to house an area that the people in the community can be able to come and learn who their neighbor is and to be able to associate with each other because, like Trish said, the one thing that makes everyone the same is the fact that we have to eat and that food connects us to each other. And understanding more about what's going on in our neighborhoods that way. It's being able to come together in that community, not just necessarily to grow food, but to grow our community.
There was something, and Trish, correct me if I'm wrong, but you told me a couple years ago when I interviewed for a column about how they started this garden, and it turns out there were longtime residents of the area that already had their own personal gardens going. They had a little garden club going, and they were kind of looking maybe with, you know, shifty eyes at this thing, thinking, what are these kids trying to do? Tell me what the neighborhood's like now and how it, you know, how it's a, you know, works with the garden together.
Well, now We have community partners who come, and they'll come and they'll water the garden for us. They'll come and
like
weed.
Neighbors who live
yes.
there.
Yes, and we've actually received emails from people who live in the neighborhood who may have concerns, maybe that their neighbor doesn't have access to healthy foods, and they'll email us, and we've created partnerships with some of the people that live there, and you know their children will come and work in the garden for them to be able to take home some of the fresh produce and things like that. So I think it's definitely opened their eyes, and they've become more excited and understanding. What the purpose is of that community garden.
Trish mentioned something earlier, too. Maybe you can tell me, explain what you mean by food mapping. What is that?
Well, it's, my understanding of food mapping is understanding how close in proximity that people have to be able to have fresh, healthy food. Especially like with having community gardens, of course, that makes that distance a lot shorter. And
so that includes things like food, community gardens.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
So tell us about Wineland Park's community garden. What are you growing there now?
Right now, we have a group of students, and they're through a program that's funded by COWIC, Central Ohio Workforce Investment Corporation. And the programming at Godman Guild is called the Summer Teen Employment Program. So we have 9 students that work there. And right now they've been working a lot on understanding what permaculture, and it's an organic garden, of course, and so they've been learning how to incorporate, you know, the typical tomatoes and cucumbers and peppers, the things that are really easy and very common for them, because you want to start with what's common for them. And then, of course, we've kind of started to move into asparagus and rhubarb and those things that are going to continually grow because they're not going to be there during the school year. So when they come back next summer, they're going to say, oh, these things have grown. And also incorporating some a little bit more exotic foods like kohlrabi, that things that haven't been introduced to. So they've been enjoying it. It's really
now, does the food just go to people in the community, or do you work with restaurants, or is there anything like that going on?
I know in the past that Wineland Park has worked with restaurants. They've actually worked with Liz Lessner here, and hopefully we're hoping to be able to re-partner with some of the restaurants in that area. The students, actually, what they've worked on during the summer to harvest, they'll take those items and sell them at farmers market markets. This past Saturday, they were actually a feature at the North Market Farmers Market, and we're able to sell their produce there.
Are they going to be anywhere this weekend?
Actually, the programming is today is their last day. Oh. So today we're actually going to have a really nice cookout with some of the produce that's left over. And the kids came up with awesome recipes that they wanted to try. And so, which is one of the main focuses also, is not necessarily teaching them about the healthy foods, but if they don't know how to cook them, then it does no good. And so being able to teach them how to cook, use the foods in the garden to be able to help develop healthy recipes and cook those for their families when they get home. And some of the students have actually started their own gardens as well at home. So I think that's awesome.
I loved seeing the kids working on the garden. What do they learn?
Oh, man. This summer we've learned a lot. This summer we've tried to make sure that every week they learn a new training skill. So one week we've learned about water conservation. We've taught them about rain barrels and different ways to be able to mulch dense plantings and things like that. Another week we've taught them about hardiness zones. And we actually this year were able to put up a greenhouse in the Wineland Park Community Garden so we can extend the growing season and have it start a little bit earlier.
Trish, how many community gardens are out there now?
Well, there's a lot of discussions about that, and I think it would be interesting to do a really comprehensive assessment. I've worked for years specifically with Bill Dawson at Franklin Park, and I know last year one of the things we did is we looked at a database of gardens, and I think there's hundreds of gardens. It would be interesting to even look at one of the things I did with the teens is we went around and I quizzed them of, you know, I'm taking you to an established garden that's successful. And then I would say, why is this successful? I would take them to gardens that were brand new and maybe were floundering. Is this a community garden? Why is it not working? And I think it'd be interesting to see how many gardens out there that are truly successful and open to the community. And again, like Yolanda said, there's so much that you get out of community gardening. And a lot of times food is secondary. It's more about just relationships and learning from each other. But I would have to say that there's probably over 300 gardens. And I think that there are varying degrees of, you know, success.
Another thing about the Wineland Park Garden that I liked is you were also teaching them about aesthetics and how a garden can look. Is that still important?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. It's
very pretty.
It is. And I really enjoy it. And I know I was talking to Trish because she always – I give her updates on what's going on.
Just it's her baby.
It's a baby. It's really close to her. And I understand that. And I was letting her know we actually – this year the teens were learning about – they planted trees. And she was like, oh, my goodness, they planted trees. And I'm like, we kept the same design. It's a very nice and circular design still. And
Kind of a sundial design. Was it a sunburst or something like that?
It's a tree. It actually comes up.
Right.
There's a pathway that comes up. And each plot branches away from that because it's a tree. And so we've included some – we have some small – we have like two apple trees and a cherry tree, and we added some trees that add to that same kind of circular tree design. And so aesthetics are very important to community gardens because it's like Trish said, it's not only about the food and about the bringing the community together, but you're also wanting to beautify your community as well.
Is there some place people can go to learn more about the Wineland Park Community Garden? Is there on the Godman Gill website?
I don't believe that there's anything on that website. Okay. I know that they could contact Godman Guild, and I know that there's probably some information at Franklin Park Conservatory's website. I would say to probably go to Franklin Park Conservatory with their Growing to Green program.
Yeah. All right. Or you can actually send emails to garden@godmanguild.org.
Okay.
And they'll answer your
questions. garden@godmanguild.org. If you would like, if you have a question or comment, join us, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Trisha and Yolanda will still be here when Elizabeth Lesner joins us in a few minutes. And you can join us as well. You can also go to All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page, for that matter, and join us there. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
This is WOSU 820 NPR News, and at noon, Fresh Air will be here. Will Ferrell co-stars in the new action comedy film, The Good Guys, which spoofs the buddy cop genre. On the next Fresh Air, a discussion with Will Ferrell and the film's director and writer, Adam McKay. The two have previously worked together on Anchorman, Talladega Nights, and Step Brothers. That discussion and more on Fresh Air at noon, right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. And remember to hear more from WOSU anytime at WOSU.org. Listen to All Sides with Ann Fisher whenever you want with the online archive. Podcast new and archived shows from all the guests and topics. Podcast All Sides at WOSU.org/AllSides. 78 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:23. Clouds today and some sunshine later in the afternoon, a high of 88. There is a slight chance of rain throughout the day as well. Clear skies tonight, a low of 65. Sunshine for Friday, a high of 82. All Sides continues. This is WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Joining us now is Elizabeth Lesner. She's the owner of Betty's Fine Food and Spirits, co-owner of Surly Girl Saloon, both in the Short North, Tip Top Kitchen and Cocktails on Gay Street downtown, and her newest venture, Dirty Frank's Hot Dogs on 4th Street downtown. Welcome to the show, Elizabeth.
Thanks, Ann. Good to be here.
You're busy.
Yeah.
You're busy. Are you actually working in any of the restaurants right now? Or
right now I'm sitting here at your show, but yeah, we're always we're always working. The restaurant industry never sleeps.
Following you on Facebook is fun sometimes.
Oh, gotcha.
It's like, oh, I woke up in the middle of the night, I had another idea. It's like, oh, no. Yay, lucky us. When did the idea, because, you know, you and I have talked about this for a couple years now, and it's about more than locally grown food, I know, and we'll get to that. But when did that idea occur to you as a restaurateur that this is not only a good thing for the menu, but a good thing for the earth kind of a thing?
Well, you know, I was really blessed in that I grew up in a house that my mother always kept a very robust, huge garden that was filled with all kinds of wonderful produce and vegetables. So I always grew up having it. It's something I've been spoiled by for sure. I became the president of the Central Ohio Restaurant Association 2 years ago, and I kind of used that to my advantage. I pushed a lot of green initiatives, and I noticed that one of the big problems that restaurants have is distribution. We're not able to get local produce. We're not necessarily patronizing our local farmers. And Ohio's an agricultural state, and that kind of bothered me. So I did everything I could to get on, you know, different boards and committees, working with local matters, working with MORPC and other organizations to see what we could do about our food supply, see how we could get more food.
What was
in.
The problem?
The problem is we aren't patronizing our local farmers. So
if you aren't, then they don't have the economies of scale to provide what you want.
Okay. Exactly. So I got with my peers, and we made that really an important thing. We made the Central Ohio Restaurant Association made a partnership with Local Matters to try to get restaurants to commit to buying more stuff locally. And what's nice is our produce distributors responded accordingly. When I started to ask them, when my peers started to say, hey, we want more local produce, they began to source it for us. They began to find it for us. One of my heroes in the industry is Elena Schock from Elena's Restaurant, and she does a terrific job always making, you know, local dishes. However, Elena has to walk down to the North Market every day to get her produce, or she even drives to counties that are far away to pick up locally made produce, meats, and I can't do that. I don't have time. My restaurants are open 11 a.m. till 2 in the morning, so we needed something better. So I was able to sort of talk to our own produce distributors who were getting, you know, questions from me and other restaurant owners to buy more and source more locally. So I really worked to try to create a demand. One great thing that really helped us is, not great, but the silver lining is last summer, you might remember, there was a tomato scare. Tomato and peppers, there was foodborne illness outbreak.
That's right. Yep.
Restaurants are terrified of foodborne illness outbreaks. That's the quickest way to go out of business. We want to make sure that our food is safe, that we're serving healthy food, we're preparing it and handling it well. It was weeks before the USDA and other organizations could figure out where the produce was coming from. Was it from Florida? Was it from Mexico? And as a result, restaurants were just pulling tomatoes off their menus. You couldn't get a tomato on a salad.
On a grilled cheese sandwich.
Exactly. But we were buying our tomatoes from just south of us, and we kept tomatoes. So customers would come in, and they'd get a salad, and there'd be a tomato, and they'd say, send that back. I don't want to eat that. And we'd be like, no, it's fine. So one thing is when you buy locally, when you buy produce, you often know the farmer. You know that it's been handled safely. The chain of it getting from the garden onto your plate is so much shorter, so there's less room for error. So when it becomes a food safety issue. And a great way I was also able to sell it to restaurant owners is the marketing of it. If I have a special each day and the special is tomato soup, I might sell a couple of bowls. If I have a special and I say it's tomato soup and it's made from this farm in Newark, Ohio, I'm not going to be able to keep that in stock. So there is a benefit to restaurants selling local food. They want to support their local economies, and they know that it's going to taste better if those tomatoes came from a farm just a few miles away.
And once again, when you join forces, it's more affordable.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because when you do it on a piecemeal basis, it is something of a luxury, isn't it?
It's
what Elena's doing, for instance.
Yeah, it's a luxury and it's hard. My brother over at Tip Top, he co-owns and runs Tip Top Kitchen and Cocktails, and they've got that wonderful market on Pearl Alley right behind them. So they would try to buy their produce over there, and I think they were really interested in zucchini and squash. And my brother, you know, talked to the farmer, and he said, you know, at $1 a zucchini, I can't do this. This isn't going to work for us. But the farmer said to my brother, hey, tell me how much you'll use, and I'll grow it for you and sell it to you at a rate that's comparable with what you're getting it from your produce distributors. So it's building relationships, creating demand, letting those farmers know that our industry is going to be there for them to buy the produce that they make, because we're buying tomatoes anyway, we're buying cucumbers and squash anyway. We would so much rather, it's safer, it's better, our customers like it better, buy it down the street than from, you know, thousands of miles away.
614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org, or you can go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page, and we'll take a step back with Harold. You want to ask about beekeepers and community gardens. Welcome to the show, Harold.
Hi, thank you very much. Appreciate the show. I'd also like to ask where the gardens in Wineland are located, because I have a grandson that is currently just started school at Wineland in preschool, and I'd like to walk him over there. But anyway, what I'm wondering about is, do you have beekeepers in your network, and do you see a place for beekeepers in this effort to establish community gardens in this area?
Trish?
Most definitely. Obviously, bees help pollinate, and the more pollination, the more food production. I do know that there are some bees. I actually just found this out, so this is an interesting question, in the Iuka Ravine, because I tried to include bees in the garden that I have that's on Hudson and 4th, and I found out that they have to have a certain amount of distance in between the bees before they can be in a garden. I do know that the discussion of bees, chickens, livestock, you know, expanding what you're growing to having more herbs and flowers and having it be more comprehensive in gardens is something that's talked about by a lot of people right now. So I think that's a good question. It would be great.
Are you linked up with COBA, the Central Ohio Beekeepers Association, or any of the activities at the university at all?
No, that sounds interesting. I can write that down. What was the name of it again?
Go to centralohiobeekeepers.org. The short for that is COBA, C-O-B-A, and they have a bee yard at the university on the west side of Kenny Road, just north of Lane Avenue. And they also work with Franklin Park Conservatory.
Okay.
And they run classes in March on beekeeping, so forth. But that would be an interesting connection for you to make, I think, and would be very helpful to a lot of people, because the bees in the particularly in the university area are really under stress and they're really needed.
Well, I think that oftentimes when there's something new like that, when people hear it, they're fearful. You know, oh, I'm afraid I'm going to be attacked by bees, or if there's chickens, the rooster is going to be too loud. And I think anytime there's something new, there just needs to be education about it. And so thanks for sharing that resource.
I agree, yes. They're doing this in many of the community garden efforts around the country. I noticed that at the Ohio Beekeepers spring meeting in they had a lot of information about what they were doing in urban areas like Cleveland and some of the other areas around the country. But where is the Wineland Park Community Garden?
Yolanda?
It's located at the Godman Guild. So you said your grandson is starting at Wyland Park or at Schoenbaum?
Yeah, well, he just started this past week at Wineland Park.
Okay. It's literally one block away. It's at the corner of 6th Avenue and 6th Street. The address is 303 East 6th Avenue. And I did want to let you know, this summer with the students that are working in Wineland Park Community Garden, we took them to a farm just near Williamsport, Ohio. It's called Honey Run Farms. And actually, they learned a lot about beekeeping and are going to start building bee boxes to be able to have bees there at the Wyland Park Community Garden as well. Because it's definitely a very important part. We actually have a section of the garden already that's dedicated specifically to bees and butterflies. So they have a lot of things, like they have the butterfly bushes, and they have echinacea or cone flowers, whichever you're used to calling them, and black-eyed Susans, and all of those things that bring those lavender, that bring the bees over there. So the kids were actually very interested in being able to build those bee boxes to incorporate those into the garden over there.
Harold, thanks for your call.
You're welcome.
Take care. 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Claire, you have a question for Liz Lessner. You're on the air.
I do. I'd heard about some of the restaurant industry recycling that you were working on, and wanted to know if you could talk a little bit about that and maybe give an update on if that has been able to move forward or if we're still at the status quo.
I just formed a company called Eartha Limited with my partner in crime, Mike Minix, and we just signed a lease on a warehouse space. It's actually really exciting. It's on the Audubon Peninsula, which is kind of cool to have a green business near such a wonderful park. The facility will be used to collect restaurant recycling, and we're going to start a hauling process. We're also going to be hauling compost straight from restaurants to community gardens, to
compost materials.
Mm-hmm. However, we are working with the regulatory agencies right now to sort of get the go-ahead that we need. We did submit our proposal. We're waiting to hear back from SWACO, but we are set and ready to go as soon as we get the green light. We're really excited. We're going to be creating about 150 new green jobs in Central Ohio. So it's a very exciting project that we're working on. It's been a lot of fun to work on.
Well, wonderful. I'm glad that is actually going to be able to move forward. I heard there were some snags. So
we
that's
hope
wonderful.
So.
There's snags everywhere all the time.
And keep up the good work, both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Claire. Yeah, the more you get into this, Liz, the more you see all the connectivity.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's, you know, when you run a restaurant, it's very eye-opening the amount of waste that we generate. So we made a goal to go zero waste by 2011. We thought, what if we could make everything
2011?
We've got a short time frame. We realized if we could reuse everything that we create or turn it into a byproduct, everything that we use, we thought that would be pretty exciting. So we did hit a snag in finding someone who could quickly haul our compost from the restaurant facility to a center, because you can't leave that in your restaurant. You're going to attract, you know, rats and other problems. The health department sure won't like that. So we formed our own company. Nobody was doing it. It was time to get rid of the compost. So
that's what you're doing with the compost materials. What about other stuff that can't be composted?
We have this 10,000 square foot facility. We'll collect glass, paper, cardboard, plastics, aluminum. We will haul it to the facility. We have these wonderful trucks that are actually powered by biodiesel, by restaurant grease. So the grease that we generate, a good example is Dirty Frank's, is my very small hot dog shop. Dirty Frank's can generate enough fuel to, it's 132 gallons, in case anyone's wondering, of restaurant oil to fuel our truck. So it can very efficiently go around and pick up everybody's recycling. We'll store it in our facility. And then we work with a waste broker is what they're called, and they'll sell, you know, we'll have a semi truck full of glass, and they'll sell it to make something else out of it. So we are hoping to basically reuse everything. We're working with other restaurants right now, some pretty major chains, trying to get them on board. And it would just be really cool if restaurants, instead of being such a huge waste generator, could be a huge byproduct generator for
Central
Ohio. So
these aren't just small restaurants that you're working with and locals, but chains as well?
Chains as well. Yeah.
You'd kind of have to have that to generate
enough.
Yeah,
but the interest has been tremendous. It's been really exciting. I think that restaurants want to do the right thing. There just hasn't been a lot of the current recycling is great about servicing, you know, a big legal office, but not about a restaurant. You know, paper in a law office can stack up for weeks and it won't create any hazards. On a hot day like today, if you have some, you know, food waste sitting outside in a trash can, you're going to start to create problems, and problems that restaurants don't need. So the key is really frequent hauling off-site and finding a way to do that efficiently. So we think that, you know, these trucks will be great because they'll be fueled by our own grease.
You mentioned your partner in crime. Is this something that he specializes in?
Yes. I'm very lucky. Mike Minix, he's one of the experts for the Ohio EPA and the American EPA. He's a college student who a couple of years ago, the Super Bowl decided that they wanted to compost. So he put a bid out and won the bid. So he did all of the composting for the Super Bowl the past few years. And it was quite a learning experience for him. And because this had never been done, United States EPA made him sort of their leading expert. He went around training and teaching other huge venues how to do this a couple of years ago. And I think you maybe even reported on it. He had done the composting at the Ohio State Fair, mm-hmm. where he basically
That's right.
You know, looked at the fair and said, gosh, you know, this is an agricultural event. It's happening right now. And why aren't we composting? You know, all these, you know, funnel cake scraps and everything else could be used to feed
going
these
to
pigs.
Waste.
So he came up with a great full scale compost project for that. So he's got a lot of experience in these sort of large venues doing that. So I snagged him up right away when I realized that we can't go zero waste without some help with the compost piece.
All righty, we have to take another break. You've been listening to Elizabeth Lessner, a well-known restaurateur in Columbus. Maybe she's going to hang around. Hope so, because it's fun in here right now. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org, or go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page. Post your question or comment there. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News. While shooting the action scenes for the new police comedy, The Other Guys, director Adam McKay stressed safety first. But the film's star, Will Ferrell, got his priorities straight.
I would then, behind Adam's back, tell everyone, don't listen to him. We got to get this shot.
Will Ferrell and Adam McKay on the next Fresh Air. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. You're a continuous listener to WOSU, so be a continuous supporter by becoming a sustaining member today. As a sustaining member, your gift automatically renews. Give $20, $50, or $100 a month, and your sustaining membership will also help keep on-air fundraising to a minimum. To become a sustaining member, just visit WOSU.org/sustainer. And thank you for your support. It's 78 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:41 this morning. A few clouds and some sunshine today. A warm day with a high of 88. There is a 30% chance of rain throughout the day. Partly cloudy tonight, a low of 65. Sunshine and not as warm for Friday, a nice day with a high of 82 for tomorrow. Looking ahead to Saturday, sunny skies and a high of 84. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Joining us now for another piece of the pie of the local food movement is Evelyn Bem of the Mid-Ohio Food Bank. Their Facebook page probably says it best. Mid-Ohio Food Bank keeps the food shelves stocked for a network of 535 emergency food pantries, soup kitchens, emergency shelters, senior dining centers, daycare and after-school enrichment programs throughout central and eastern Ohio. Evelyn is senior vice president of the Mid-Ohio Food Bank's Food and Strategic Initiatives. Welcome, Evelyn, to the show.
Thanks, Ann. It's good to be here.
It's been an exciting past year for you. Tell us everything that's changed, and why you're on the show is about your own community garden. Tell us how you got there.
Sure. We've had a busy year at Mid-Ohio Food Bank. Last October, we made a move to Grove City to a new facility to better enable us to serve the agencies that we partner with in 20 counties here in central and eastern Ohio. We have 204,000 square feet of space there, and additional space that made it possible for us to start a garden. So from early fall, we started thinking about gardening and what it would take. And in early May, planted our first community garden. It is now, you know, the height of the harvest season, and we are producing. We're really proud of it. We're producing tomatoes and squash and eggplant and various kinds of lettuces, a whole array of things that are fairly easy to grow. But we did have the help of several master gardeners here in central Ohio to get us off on the right track. The food that we're producing is going directly to food pantries that we serve. And as we open our food pantry at the Grove City facility, we'll be able to use the garden with the food pantry. So when families come to get emergency food at the pantry, we'll be able to direct them out to the garden and say, there's a big harvest of tomatoes today, help yourself. So we know that that's going to give people that are in need of emergency food the ability to step right into a garden and harvest something perfectly fresh and see how it's grown.
When you knew you had this extra 4 acres laying around, and when you moved to Grove City, did it immediately occur to you, or did you think about it for a while and wonder, what are we going to do with all this extra space?
Well, we wanted to provide healthier food. That's a real goal at Mid-Ohio Food Bank, and we have partnered for a number of years with a variety of folks here in central Ohio. One of the first was the Plant a Row for the Hungry movement, which was initiated by the Garden Writers of America, encouraging folks with their home gardens just to plant an extra row, and when harvest season came and there was more than they could use in their own kitchens, to share it with a local food pantry or the food bank. And so we've been doing that for a long time. We have certainly felt that it was really important to move beyond processed food, canned foods, to fresh foods, as you've talked about this morning, the importance in the diet, the whole connection to obesity when fresh foods and fresh produce are lacking. So we wanted to do it. We didn't have the space to do it, and we really didn't have the knowledge to do it. And the collaborations we have found in this community, you know, several people have mentioned Franklin Park Conservatory right. and their gardening movement. All of these people have been enormously helpful, and we want to be a partner in this as well. And our focus needs to be, how can we get that food distributed to the network of food pantries that are providing emergency food for hungry people? And that's really at an all-time high right now. Our food pantries are responding to over 140,000 requests for food every month.
How are you handling the distribution? I would imagine storage and distribution.
Well, one thing that our new facility has made possible is better storage of fresh produce. On Mound Street, in our old facility, we had no refrigeration for fresh produce, and so it was a matter of moving it within hours. The new facility has room for 6.5 semis of produce, which gives us an extra couple days. And we are partnering, of course, with Ohio Growers in a state-funded program that has been going on for a number of years now. And we know that there is a lot of produce grown. And in a good year, like this year has been, there can be excess that won't make it to the market. And if we can do a partnership with Ohio Growers and help them recover the cost of getting the food out of the field and into a form that we can distribute it into big totes that can come to the food bank, we can get it onto trucks and distribute it through the 20 counties. The refrigeration that we have at the food bank now gives us that extra day or two to accomplish that. So last year, we distributed 7.2 million pounds of fresh produce, which is, I think people are often surprised by that. And one of the things that we started to think about, we promote food drives all over Central Ohio and said, bring your non-perishable food to Mid-Ohio Food Bank, or we will see to it that it gets to food pantries. And we never talk about fresh food because, of course, we don't want people bringing a bag of tomatoes and putting it in a food barrel. But it's caused a problem for us in that people think, they only do canned goods. They don't right. do fresh food. And that's the furthest thing from the truth. Fresh food is absolutely critical to our distribution.
You're listening to Evelyn Bem of the Mid-Ohio Food Bank. Now, one of the things that helped permit you to work fluidly with the growers is cash. And Mid-Ohio Food Bank has been asking people, you know, to give you the opportunity, not only with the fresh growers, but also with the other food providers. It gives you more flexibility in
sure.
what you purchase.
And of course, we need those dollars. You know, 45% of the food that comes to the food bank comes from the food industry. It is donated by food companies. But that donated food isn't necessarily free food. In fact, it isn't free food. If a company in Michigan, Kellogg's, for instance, donates a semi-load of cereal. That is a huge donation to the food bank, but there is a cost to bring that to Central Ohio and distribute it to get it direct to the food pantry. So there's always cost involved, and those dollars donated enable us to turn that donated food into food that will be at the food pantry exactly when it's needed, when the food pantry is open and serving so many people.
How did you decide what to grow in your new garden?
It was sort of hit and miss. We hoped it would be
just like
things
the rest
that
of
were
us.
Easy. Exactly. We are no experts. This is our first year. We have cabbage worms.
So do I.
We're asking our gardeners to help us with that. We want an organic garden, so we're not using any pesticides to get rid of those bugs.
Do those things come out at night?
I don't know. Okay. I have no idea. Okay. But we've had a lot of people that have collaborated with us. We have volunteers that just like to garden that come and help us weed and help us harvest and say, oops, maybe you need a better tomato cage. That tomato's falling over and they're not going to grow right if you don't get them up off the ground. So, you know, we've had a lot of help, and we have some extra land. We hope to expand this garden. Our first year is a learning experience
for us. How big is
it
this year?
We have 8,000 square feet and 13 raised beds in that space. But we have additional space behind the building, and we are continuing to think about, you know, what is the best use of that, and can we do more gardening and make, expanded gardens that will make a huge difference as well.
Are other food banks doing things like this?
Some are, but I think we're really a leader in the movement here. There's a network of food banks belonging to Feeding America, the national network. There's about 200 food banks across the country, and a few of them are doing gardens, and more of them are experimenting, and we're learning from our colleagues that have tried it. And, you know, we are learning from their successes and from their missteps as well. So I think it definitely is going to, it's something that is coming, and it's coming fast, because we are all committed to seeing to it that the food that we supply to our network of food pantries for charitable food distribution is the healthiest can be and offers the fresh produce and fresh fruits that, you know, families crave and, as you talked about earlier, often don't have access to.
We had a caller earlier, Wilson, I think his name was, and he talked about how he would goes out to the farms and the Amish farms, and they let him go into the fields and take what he wants, because that's the stuff that people won't buy, you know, in the regular markets. It's not pretty enough, I guess. Is that kind of like the sort of stuff that the growers send to you, or is it just surplus, period?
It's both, actually. Okay. In fact, there was a study done early this year that estimated across this country 6 billion pounds of produce is wasted. It's either not harvested in the fields, or it's harvested but there's not a market for it. And certainly in Ohio, in a good growing season, there can be excess that there's no market for. And it's a shame to leave that in the fields when it could be put to such good use to feeding hungry people. This year is a great year for peaches. Now, last year, the peach crop wasn't so good and there wasn't excess. But this year, they're producing peaches faster than they can be sold or processed. And so those peach growers are enabled then to, you know, get that food to food banks across Ohio to see to it that hungry people are fed and have fresh produce for the summer.
How much actually gets to your clients? Well, I guess I want to ask, you know, when someone comes up and you say go out in the back and go ahead and pick some tomatoes, are they surprised?
Well, we haven't initiated it yet. Pantry's just ready to open, but that's the plan, because what we learn from our colleagues working in the field, in this whole field of endeavor, is that, you know, lots of people have never had the opportunity to be in a garden. They don't even know where necessarily that food is coming from or how it's grown. So our thought is, by, you know, inviting people into our garden, they will see how it's grown. And you know, that will be of benefit to them. A number of our food pantries here are interested in having a garden partnering with someone in the community more likely to have a garden. You know, our pantries are busier than they have ever been before. And over 60% of those pantries are run entirely by volunteers. And so we can't assume that they can dig up a garden in the back of their facility and have a garden right next to their pantry. But maybe they can partner with someone in the community. And Wyland Park's a great example of this, you know, people coming together. And if we can do that over and over in our community and find other partners that will work with pantries so that they can deliver direct to them the fresh produce that maybe that they grew in their backyards or in their community garden, and it helps to supply that food pantry in the neighborhood.
614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Yolanda, did you want to add something there?
I was just going to say that the Wyland Park Community Garden does partner with a food pantry that's over on Fifth Avenue. Just like you were saying, it's very imperative that we partner with those. The Fruit of the Vine pantry that's on Fifth Avenue, it's owned by the Vineyard Church of Columbus. And they have the largest plot in the community garden there. And I know some of the other food pantries, like Clintonville Community Resource Center, has a garden in the back of that facility as well to be able to offer fresh produce. So I think it's an awesome idea, and I'm glad it's a larger scale.
So the Vineyard Church, they manage their part of the garden. Mm-hmm. They go in there and they help.
Yes, they have volunteers that they send that come over and will harvest the produce, and they'll come and weed and things like that. And they even help with sometimes when they come during the day, they'll help the students that are working there as well weed their plots and things like that. I tell them they're cheating, but they do help out.
Now, who volunteers at the Mid-Ohio Food Bank, Evelyn?
We have over 8,000 volunteers last year and doing a variety of things. And since the spring, we've been offering work in the garden as one of the alternatives. Well, yes, lots of people have called and said, oh, I'll be glad to come over for a while. So for people that want to volunteer, either packing food at the food bank or sorting and packaging food or working in the garden, call the food bank, and we'll find something good for them to do.
614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org or go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page and do it that way. What are some of the challenges?
The biggest challenge is distribution.
Still.
And Liz had mentioned that as well in restaurant work too. How do you get things moved in a timely manner? And so when large a semi-load of fresh produce comes in, the challenge is that distribution, how to do it quickly. We have at least two trucks for this harvest season and have two new drivers. So we've increased the routes to move food, not only here in Franklin County, but throughout the 20 counties that we serve. And that is the biggest challenge, to get the food to the pantry as that just-in-time delivery. Most pantries are not open 5 days a week. They may be open 3 days a week, and they're only open from 1 to 3. To make this all work, that produce needs to be delivered that morning of the distribution. And those are the largest challenges that we face in routing it, in the resources to, you know, have the extra trucks that are necessary, because the harvest season came on a bit early this year, I think because of good weather. And so it started coming fast. And to be able to gear up that quickly to take advantage of the Ohio-grown produce. Now, some of the other things grown in Ohio, you know, we're a great apple producer, we're a great potato producer and onion producer. And you've got, you know, time on those. In fact, we distribute that kind of produce for, you know, through February. But this stuff that's coming on now, fresh corn and fresh green beans, you've got to move it fast.
We have an email now from Paul, and boy, I just checked the clock. I can't believe how the time has flown. This is from Paul. Too many condos and homeowner associations are banning vegetable plants. I know one family whose condo Nazis wrote her up for planting a single tomato plant along with her flowers. How do we deal with this? Gardens are education, exercise, healthy food sources, and low-cost alternatives to supermarkets. Trish?
Join a garden that's already available if it's something that's accessible, and really try and find something close to your home. I think that that's a great way to deal with that. And but if you are interested in taking it on, then I guess the next thing I would say is challenge it in a respectful way. Look at what some of your rights are, and collaborate with other people to maybe start a garden there, either on your porch or do vertical gardening. Start small. And just look at other cities that are doing that and incorporating gardens in spaces like that.
You know, when I wrote a few years ago about the rooftop garden at the Tip Top, I was also entranced by the tomato garden at Riverside Hospital that they had near the parking lot. I loved that it was a spot. It was free. You could spend a bunch of money on, you know, flowers that are going to die at the end of the season. But they put dozens and dozens of tomato plants in it. It was just some guy who worked there who decided to do it. It was kind of neat. We're running out of time. I want to say thank you to my guests right now, Evelyn Baum of the Mid-Ohio Food Bank. Thanks for being with us today.
Oh, thank you.
And also Elizabeth Lesner, restaurateur, supernatural sometimes, I think people think. So you're opening up a couple more places in town, and I wish you luck with that.
Thank you.
And also Yolanda Moser of the Godman Guild. She is the supervisor for the Godman Guild's Community Gardens. Thanks for joining us today, Yolanda.
Thank you for having me.
And Trish Dunbostel of Local Matters. Trish, it's great to see you again. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
That's all the time we have for this show on Local Food today. Thanks for joining us. And there is still an hour left at the Columbus Public Health Department's Farmers Market down on Parsons Avenue. So go to the website, wosu.org/allsides, and we will have a link there if you want more information about that. Otherwise, thanks for joining us today. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU. This is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus, and streaming on the web at wosu.org, WOSU 820 NPR News.